To order, the time is 3:18, the House Labor and Commerce Committee. This is Wednesday, March 13th. Members present are Representative Stutes, Representative Tallarico, Representative Fields, Representative Hannon. I'm co-chair Wool. We have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, I'd like to thank Selman Holland, our current House Labor and Commerce Secretary, and Eric Heimbigner from the Juno LIO. Our committee aide today is Ashley Strouk. If you have any communications with any of us, it can go through Ashley. Silence your cell phones, but that's rarely a problem. Our first and only order of business today is a confirmation hearing. The speaker referred the following governor's appointment to the House Labor and Commerce Committee: Dr. Tamika Ledbetter for the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Members have received the appointee's application. The appointee is in the room and will testify. And I'd like to recognize Representative Ledoux as being present. And if she would like to come up and speak to us, that'd be great. And then we'll have public testimony. So just a gavel in for public testimony now. I'll let you speak, Dr. Ledbetter, and then we'll have public testimony.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Dr. Tamika Ledbetter, Commissioner Designee for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Greetings to the co-chair, Chairman Wool, and co-chair Ledoux, and greetings to the rest of the committee. Thank you for another opportunity to address the committee and to share with you my background in workforce development and extensive experience that makes me well suited to serve as the commissioner of the department if confirmed. I had the opportunity to meet with each of you, each of the committee members already, yet welcome any further questions or points of discussion that you may have. As my resume reflects, I have been employed with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development since 2007. I began my state service career as a career development specialist, administering federal and state job training and employment grants within the Division of Employment and Training Services, otherwise known as DEETS. I served in the same division until my recent appointment as Commissioner Designee. During my time with DEETS, there was a core workforce development philosophy that we shared oftentimes with participants: get a job, keep a job, and earn more income. I believe that I represent the embodiment of that stated philosophy, and I have demonstrated strong work ethic, excellent communicative skills, the ability to build collaborative partnerships, which I believe that has been the bedrock of my rapid elevation through the leadership ranks within the department. I served as a manager of the Mat-Su Job Center in Wasilla for 8 years, and then I became the regional manager of the Anchorage Mat-Su Economic Region, having oversight of all of the job centers, staff, programs, and services within that region. When I think of the totality of my state service career, I believe I have contributed in some way to every population served by the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, from employers and the business community, who we believe are our primary customers, to veterans and their families as they are serving our country, to Alaska Natives, returning citizens, older workers, TANF recipients, dislocated workers, youth, people living with disabilities, those who are educated, and those who are deficient in basic skills. The work that I've done within the department is consistent with the primary components of our department, which is to protect workers, to provide income replacement, and to generate and build workforce development, which I believe is valuable to all Alaskans. As a workforce development professional, I believe the answer to many of the ills of society is a good paying job. In my experience, a plan to reduce poverty and improve economic conditions begins with a sound workforce development strategy. An individual, I believe, who is recently separated from incarceration is less likely to return to prison if there's an immediate attachment to viable employment. A public assistance recipient no longer needs federally subsidized support wants skills are developed that leads to suitable income. A youth who is introduced to employment early in life is more likely to complete high school and to determine a solid career path because of their increased awareness of various industry options. So I have a fundamental belief that work brings dignity and that a good paying job can change the trajectory of someone's life for the better. And having grown up in the Bronx, New York, I know firsthand that training opportunities that leads to jobs with good wages, aids in strengthening households and communities. The human spirit, I believe, is lifted when an individual is able to support his or her family and to provide for their children a better future. And so with that in mind, my career with the department has reflected my commitment to ensuring that programs and services and training and employment and funding opportunities are easily accessible. I have been intentional about hiring the most qualified applicants and workers. As a manager, I have consistently worked with staff to prepare them for professional development and promotional opportunities. More staff were elevated under my supervisory leadership to positions within our department and outside of the department. As commissioner, I plan to continue lending my leadership competencies to build a qualified workforce for the public and for private sector. I'm invested in connecting qualified candidates to viable employment opportunities and providing training opportunities that help build the skills needed for the local labor market. My background also includes my service commitment on active duty in the United States Air Force. I served as a chaplain assistant during Operation Iraqi Freedom. I did deploy to Iraq. My husband is a prior service Marine, and we've been married for 21 years. We've raised two sons who followed in our footsteps wanting to serve their country. They are currently on active duty in the United States Marine Corps. Our 13-year-old daughter recently received her acceptance letter to attend the Matsu Korean Technical Education School in Wasilla. And so what I want to say about that is our family is an example that there are many paths to a successful career. You can start at point A and end up wherever you want to be if you just pursue the options and the opportunities that are available. And so I do hold several degrees. I have an undergraduate, a graduate, and an advanced degree. However, I know that college is not the path for everyone, and therefore other opportunities should exist for those who don't desire to go directly to higher education out of high school. It's important to me that we promote as a department the various opportunities available for youth and all job seekers that will lead to a great career. I'm grateful to Governor Mike Dunleavy for placing his confidence in me. I'm supportive of his vision to bring jobs to Alaska and to provide training opportunities that build a qualified workforce in preparation for those jobs, especially in rural Alaska. And oftentimes the staff will hear me echo the governor's message that Alaska is open for business. And as commissioner, I'm committed to developing industries that generate income opportunities for the residents of this state. And so my vision for the department is to lead with integrity, to demonstrate a commitment to our core functions, to increase training and employment opportunities, to promote worker safety, to ensure that Alaskans are paid a commensurate wage for the work that they're doing. Additionally, I believe that this department needs to be responsive to business leaders and their industry-related needs. I have asked the deputy commissioners and the division directors and frontline managers to welcome diverse perspectives, to invite discussion from public partners and private industry. If we are to have an effective workforce development plan, it will require strong partnerships with private training providers and private employers. And not only is Alaska open for business, but I believe the commissioner's office should also be open for business, which to me means I welcome the collective sharing of ideas from all stakeholders who have invested, who are invested in building collective, building partnerships and building a stronger workforce and economy. And so as I close, I would like to say I look forward to this opportunity to lead and to support employers and workers and the whole industry sector, all industries, and to enhance opportunities in every region of the state, not just in the urban areas, but also rural Alaska. And so with the meeting today and our department overview and my individual meetings with each of you, I hope that I have adequately presented my qualifications and interest in serving in this leadership capacity. And I welcome any further questions you have. And thank you for allowing me to share my desire to work toward our shared goal of building Alaska's workforce and increasing job opportunities across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Ledbetter. And thank you for your presentation today and for the department overview of a week or so ago, whenever that was. And are there any questions from the committee? Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I should disclose that the commissioner and I were co-workers and Deputy Commissioner San Juan. So I am definitely very biased in favor of Commissioner Ledbetter based on her many years of experience with and commitment to the department. I know she was trusted, well-liked, and well-respected within the department, and I think it's just great to see someone as a designee who has demonstrated commitment and experience in a department that does really important work for Alaskans. And obviously, thanks for her prior service as well. I also want to thank Deputy Commissioner Munoz, who answered a lot of my detailed questions following a meeting with the commissioner. And it was really good to see a continued commitment to wage and hour enforcement, and including through a very cost-effective strategic enforcement model. And I was glad to see that the budget does not reduce wage and hour capacity. Unfortunately, we have much lower, as the commissioner, Deputy Commissioner Munoz explained in the answer to my question, unfortunately, we have much lower wage and hour capacity today than we did 20 years ago, almost half on a per capita basis. And I just think that's something that we should look at as a legislature of grossly inadequate capacity. Those folks are very overworked. It's really important work, and I hope we can address that in the future. So with all that as a prelude, Commissioner Ledbetter, department plays an important role in reentry, which is obviously really important in terms of reducing crime. Could you just briefly address some recent Department of Labor efforts to assist DOC and other departments with reentry?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Representative Fields, as you know, reentry was something that the Department of Labor was participating in before, I like to say, it was a hashtag. And so we will continue to support that work. I have a meeting scheduled next week with Commissioner Designee Dahlstrom, so that I can help to lay out the groundwork and the foundation for what we've already done and what we would like to continue to do. We have extended ourselves to Department of Corrections to create a rapid attachment environment to employment for those returning citizens. We realize that the way to reduce recidivism is to help individuals get into employment immediately. We went as far as a department to actually embed employment service technicians into some of the facilities so that as those programs were being developed, we could supply the interviewing skills workshops and the resume writing workshops and how to look for work prior to the release date. We no longer have those staff in Highland Mountain and Goose Creek. However, one of our employees recently accepted a position with Department of Corrections, and so some of that work is continuing to go on, and we will continue to allow all of our employment security specialists or employment services technicians to continue to actively support those returning citizens. So they're connected to the job centers as soon as possible, and what we really want to do is work with our local employer community to have available openings lined up to pipeline many of those reentrants into, so that as they are released to employment rather than having that gap in trying to secure employment. We want them to actually go into work as soon as possible. And there are certain industries that are well suited for that, like the seafood industry.
Follow up. I guess a two-pronged follow up on that. I'm guessing is the reduction of those positions previously in prisons a result of the, I guess, the end of the LEAP grant? If so, are there opportunities to replace that capacity? And I'm curious if in replacing that capacity, we can go beyond what I believe is the statutory minimum. DOC has to coordinate reentry at least 90 days before the release date. What I'm curious about is, can we help DOC really start to look at reentry from the time that someone enters incarceration? So, you know, for something like adult basic education, that certainly takes more than 90 days. We're actually planning their reentry from the day they enter incarceration.
The answer to that, through the chair, is yes. We need to develop a plan that starts from the very beginning. You don't want to wait until the individual is, you know, they've served however long and now they're being released within 60 or 90 days, and then we begin to talk about employment. We want to make that a part of their initial assessment when they first show up in the prison, and to realize that they need to start thinking about, what am I going to do once I'm released? Do I have the skill set for the type of job that I'd like to have? And is the employment that I'm looking for something that I actually can do? If I've got to bury a crime, I need to think about and weigh out what else I can do. So, yes, we're looking at participating in that way. And some of our discussion with the commissioner designee will be about that.
Great. One more follow-up. You mentioned seafood as an opportunity for reentry. I know a lot of processors have expressed openness to reentrance or even incarcerated individuals working in processing facilities, which could help reduce the need for H-2B foreign workers and retain more of this important seafood processing income here in Alaska. Could you talk about where we are today and kind of near-term opportunities for increased Alaska hire in seafood?
Through the chair, I see that as being very plausible. The seafood industry, the processes that we've talked to, they are very interested in filling their vacancies. They have a lot of vacancies, and they just want individuals who will show up to work and do a good job while they're there. And so as long as we can make that connection, I think we're going to meet their need of having, you know, people fill their vacancies, and we're going to meet DOC's need to reduce recidivism, and we're going to meet the individual's need to have gainful employment once they are separated from their incarceration.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux.
So I know, Dr. Ledbetter, that in my community, Muldoon, the job service center is very, very important. At one point, there was thoughts that the and this was years ago, that job service center would not remain open. Is it your plans to keep that job services center open?
Through the chair, it's my plan to look at everything that we do and ensure that every community has access to the services and programs that we provide. I was at the Muldoon Job Center yesterday. I went to visit the staff that are there, and I always want to make sure that staff, they see the commissioner, and they know that we're invested in the work that they're doing. And so my goal is to make sure that that community has the same level of services and better that they've always had. So at this point, I have not made any determination to do anything with that job center, but I do believe we have an opportunity to reach more into that community to ensure that people are able to connect with jobs.
Just follow up. And you say an opportunity to reach more or reach further. How so? Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Absolutely, through the chair. When I started my career, I started out as a career development specialist housed at the Muldoon Job Center. And so there was a lot of activity going on at that time. We were having job fairs in that job center. We were reaching out and having employers come in for hiring events. And so I would like to see more of a ramp up of services being provided to that community. I would like to see more employers on site actually hiring and offering individuals employment. We also have our veterans representative reaching into the base population because it's closer to the Muldoon Job Center. And so we have a lot of opportunity to make sure that every individual that wants to work has an opportunity to work. And right now across the nation, we have 7 million vacancies. There's a lot of those vacancies that are right here in Alaska. There's no reason why individuals don't have employment unless we have a skills deficiency issue. And so we really need to look at the community that's there and figure out a way to increase those skills so that Alaskans have the opportunities to connect to the jobs that are viable and open.
So I love your response about ramping the center up. Do you happen to know how long the lease is there for that Job Services Center?
Through the chair, I don't have that information at my disposal right now, but would make sure that you receive that information.
All right. Thank you very much.
Any more questions from the committee? Ms. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair. Census 2020 is coming, and for Alaska, that's a big deal. We are one of the areas that's hard to survey and report, and your department is home of the state statistician that manages that data. What do we need to enhance our preparedness to make sure that we take advantage of an adequate count, a complete count of Alaskans?
Through the chair, and I'm sure I can provide you a more thorough answer at a later time, but what I would say is people need to understand the importance of the census. They need to understand how the data is derived and how important that data is to some of the funding that we receive federally. And so we will do what we can on our end. Usually we offer recruitment efforts to hire those census workers. We do a lot to encourage people to complete that census. And so we'll do what we can, but in terms of a full spectrum answer, I will be sure to get back to you on that one. Thank you.
seeing no more questions, Representative Fields?
If my colleagues would indulge me, I did want to ask about a couple other things. I didn't want to jump in line if others had questions.
I have a few questions, but I can wait till the end. Go ahead.
Okay. Commissioner Ledbetter, I know the Division of Employment Training Services has done a great job bringing federal apprenticeship money to the state, supporting new primary care association apprenticeships, which I think are actually in most of our districts right now. I know that the Aleutians actually have, near Representative Stute's district, have some really strong healthcare apprenticeships, ANTHC. And what's really exciting, I think, is that now Alaska Pacific University and Illisogvik are actually conferring college credit for these primary care apprenticeships that are throughout rural Alaska. So that's very exciting and is supported by federal money that your department obtained. Do you anticipate that with continued congressional appropriation of money for apprenticeship, Alaska will have more opportunities to either expand these healthcare apprenticeships or other non-traditional apprenticeships?
Through the chair, I see apprenticeship continuing. I think we have an opportunity here in Alaska to continue down that path and to help people earn while they learn. And the healthcare apprenticeship has been a wonderful thing for many of our communities, and we're going to continue down that path. I was in D.C. last week and at the NASWA conference, and we talked a lot about apprenticeship, and with the rollout of the president's budget, we don't see any reduction to apprenticeship, and so we'll continue on as we've been doing.
That's great. And I guess I should have mentioned the some of these are in behavioral health, and actually I think the largest group of behavioral health apprentices is actually in the Mattoo Valley, and these are important jobs to address our opioid crisis. Follow up. So, different subject. Last year, the legislature passed HB 79. I know Representative Ledoux and many others did important work on this subject. Could you talk about department's support for implementing this very important bill to address the issue of independent contractors and providing clarity for both businesses and workers about who's an employee versus who's an independent contractor?
Through the chair, the last couple of weeks we have worked very hard to streamline the definition of independent contractor to be consistent with what was passed. And so we've worked with our different divisions, unemployment insurance, workers' compensation, and we want to make sure that the definition is such that when an employer looks at it, they understand what it is. We don't want different definitions per division. So yes, to answer your question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Any other questions from the committee? I guess I'll throw a couple at you, Commissioner Ledbetter. The concept of reentry has been coming up a lot, and we all want people leaving incarceration to get employment and get on the road to a full
fulfilling life and not end up behind bars again. How much do you think having a criminal record prohibits people from finding work? And that, do you see any kind of possible solution to having employers look up someone's record or court view and say, oh, you were incarcerated, I don't want to hire you? I mean, I know that's a problem, and other states are dealing with it. Have you thought much about that problem?
Co-Chairman Wool, I have not, in my experience in the almost 12 years with the department. I find that the employers in Alaska are very friendly to people who have had, you know, troubled backgrounds. Ultimately, an employer wants someone who's going to show up to work. And so it's incumbent upon us to help the individual to go after the type of employment that is not something that will be problematic for the type of background that they have. So the opportunities are there. What we have to do is reduce the myth that because you have a background, automatically an employer does not want to hire you. I come from the Mat-Su, you know, the fastest growing area across the state, and employers have never shown an issue with hiring someone who is a returning citizen. In fact, they're willing to do so. And so we just have to change our conversation about that. We have to change the Department of Corrections language about that. We have to change the probation officers' language about that, and just let them know that the jobs are available. We just need to have the workforce to do the jobs.
Thank you. The fish processing industry was mentioned, and last meeting we had, I mentioned touring some facilities in Kodiak with Representative Stutes, talking to them about their labor issues, and again, hotel, seasonal work, mine work, work up north, a lot of it is being done by out-of-state people, seemingly because there's a shortage or lack of I don't think it's qualified workers, of people that want to fill the jobs. I know we have high unemployment here. Is that a problem that you guys have tried to tackle? And I'm a small business owner. I talk to a lot of employers. They express the scarcity of not necessarily people, just people that seemingly want to show up for work and stick with it. What are your thoughts on that? Because that's definitely a big issue for a lot of people in the world. I'm not in the organized labor, or I come at from a private side, and a lot of us have and organized labor too probably has a tough time finding some help. So what are your thoughts on that and possible solutions?
Thank you for that question, Mr. Co-Chair. I have been thinking a lot about that, and what I'm finding is we have to engage a new workforce that we have not really tapped into. We need to reach out to the younger generation and encourage them to become aware of the industries that are true to Alaska. We want younger workers to want to work here and live here, spend their money here. And the only way that that's going to happen is if we introduce those different industries to them earlier on than what we're doing. If we wait until they're 18, it's too late. So we need to develop programs that allow for our teenagers to begin to be introduced to our seafood industry, to our construction industry, to the healthcare industry. I understand that there are certain positions that you can't do until you're 18, but there are a lot of positions that you can do a lot earlier than that. And so when a young person is what I would say working age, usually 14, we need to get them interested in some of those industries, and that will help us to pipeline and fill some of those positions with local workers rather than having to fill them with out-of-state workers or even foreign workers.
Representative Ledoux.
So do you intend to work in conjunction with the schools on this? I had the opportunity to speak yesterday with a young teacher from Nikiski. He was actually in the audience today on the House floor, and he was saying how in that community, people from various professions would come into the schools, junior high school, sometimes even elementary schools, and tell the kids, what their profession was about. Is that something that you'd be working with?
Through the chair, absolutely. In fact, the governor has put forward legislation to put all of the monitoring and coordination of Korean technical education under the Department of Labor. And I think that's a fascinating thing, because any real Korean technical education has to start with employment in mind. And so what we know about young minds, young people, they may not know what they want to be when they grow up, but by fifth grade, they know exactly what they don't want to be. And a deselection is still a process. And so the earlier we get industry in front of them, industry leaders in front of them, mom and dad taking them to work with them a day or two, explaining to them what they do, private industry offering opportunities for summer youth employment, after school, finding, you know, someone who's willing to allow you to work 2 or 3 hours a day, that is going to be the way that we're going to carve out interest for that young person, and we're going to see that we'll benefit greatly by having our younger workers decide early that they want the types of jobs that are available here in Alaska.
Thank you.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I do have a somewhat of a question. First, I want to say I'm very encouraged, because I think that you have a wonderful leadership group. I've had the opportunity to work with them, and of course, I'm all about the seafood industry, and so to know that you're engaging the seafood industry is very important to me. And so along those lines, I was talking to a fisherman in Kodiak who was, I will say, more than quite distressed, if you have any clue as to how upset a fisherman can get, because he had a son that he was going to take on his boat to work with him. But the way the labor laws are written, his son cannot operate the hydraulics on his boat until he's 18 years old. That's a huge problem, and that's a huge deterrent for young people, because it definitely puts a dent in the revenue that they make. And I certainly would like to see that addressed. I mean, I can understand having to have supervision or whatever it might be, but to clearly prevent it, it creates a huge insurance liability mm-hmm. for these individuals that have the boats. If something should happen and the individual's under 18, could you maybe speak to that?
Through the chair, yes, ma'am, I could speak to that. There are, in Alaska, we're different. Certain things about us is different. For example, do I need a CDL to drive in rural Alaska where there's no interstate? Probably not. And so I asked Secretary Acosta this very question when I was at the NASWA conference and he presented to us. And I asked him about different regulations that are in place in Alaska that may not be suited for us, and if there was an opportunity to apply for waivers. And he assured me that if there was an opportunity for a waiver and it was something that was necessary and did not cause any major challenges and we could speak to that, that he would be willing to do so. And so it just depends on what it is. I can't speak specifically to that issue, but we want to keep people safe. We want to keep young workers safe, but we also want to make it easier to do business in Alaska. And so if there are ways to apply for a waiver or roll back some of our regulations that make sense, then we should look at doing that.
Follow up.
I would be happy to follow up on that with my constituent and then pass on the information. Thank you.
Representative Fields.
Just on that point, Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if the ASD, Ms. Harbor, might recall the wage and hour fishing exemptions offhand. I know there are exemptions for fishing. I don't recall what they are. Okay. No problem. Just curious if the answer was
well,
in the room.
Fields, there was a bill in front of a different committee that Representative Ledoux and I are on, and the federal labor laws were brought up and child labor and fishing, especially a family member. But I don't know the specifics of hydraulics but fishing is sort of an exempt area, so I'm not going to quote it by any means, but family members, fishing, farming, all fits in there. Let me go back to my question about filling jobs, and some of these jobs are about exposing kids to career opportunities, but some jobs like working in a kitchen at a hotel or loading baggage or working on the slime line may not be career type jobs, but just jobs that we want to get people in and help businesses out that can't find people just to show up, like you said. So, and I don't think exposing kids to like washing dishes in high school is necessarily the way to go, but maybe it is. Paloma's nodding yes, but I mean, it's a different time. When I was growing up, you know, kids wanted to work and get out of the house and come home with a little paycheck, and maybe that's changed a little bit now. I don't know if the pay is not good enough, and that for foreign workers the pay is better. I don't know if these things have been thought about. I'm sure they've been thought about, but anyhow, they're issues, I would like to see our kids take some of these jobs as opposed to going and going to J-1 visas and as a first resort. So hopefully
Mr. Chair, can I address that?
Yes, you may. I'm sorry for dragging that one off too
long.
No, that's
fine. I would like to refer you to my February letter in the Trends magazine, and I speak in there in that edition about first jobs. And so for a young person, washing dishes is a wonderful opportunity to learn work ethic and how to do a good job and how to show up every day and how to be on time, and that your coworker and your boss is also your customer. And so I think that's part of the challenge. We don't put value on all work, and everyone starts somewhere. Successful people start somewhere. My first job was cleaning New York City parks. I had no idea that, 30 years later, I would be doing what I'm doing now. But I tell you, I was the best park cleaner that there was, because work really brings dignity, and getting that first check at $4.13 an hour.
You made a lot back then.
I was making a lot, and it was my own money with my name on it. And so it does something to you when you have those initial experiences. And I think we should stop telling our young people, oh, McDonald's is not a good job, or you don't want to work for a McDonald's. Well, McDonald's managers earn $55,000 a year. That's sometimes more than what their first grade teachers are earning.
Or their legislator.
But yes. So we just have to we have to start them somewhere. And if that's their first job, or if you're coming off of public assistance and maybe just need to get into the rhythm of work, any job is a good job as long as that's what you want to do.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I guess we can date ourselves by announcing what our minimum wage was when we first got it. I worked in a kitchen in a nursing home. I think it was $2.75. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to clarify, when I said his son could work for him, but he couldn't hire anyone under that age. Right. And so it kind of detours, especially in the fishing industry, you want to start them. Yeah, so I just wanted to make that clarification. Thank you.
Thank you. A couple more questions, and then we can adjourn this meeting. Unemployment, you mentioned that last meeting, that unemployment pay, I think Alaska is one of the lower wage state or lower states of unemployment reimbursement or unemployment benefits, I guess. And you stated what unemployment, I mean, and can you speak to that as our state unemployment reimbursement? We did pass a bill last year that raised it up a little bit, but you mentioned what you thought unemployment was used for, basically, and can you reiterate that, please?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, in my estimation, the unemployment is not to help people live for an extended amount of time. It's to give them an opportunity to buy milk and cheese and bread and put gas in the car while they look for work. And so we have a reemployment services team or staff that help individuals who are receiving unemployment insurance to come off of the system by getting another job. And so to me, that's what all of our programs are about, helping people go to work immediately. And the quicker we can get you re-engaged with employment, the better off that individual is, the better off his or her family is, the better off our total economy is, because they're now paying again into the system. And so, you know, I can get back to you about the specific number of how much unemployment is, but my goal and our staff's goal is to get people back to work as quickly as possible.
I understand that, but I think also some people that are had a, say, a pretty good job with a pretty good wage and get laid off or their company closes or something like that, then begin looking for work, but they're not going to necessarily take any old job. They want something close to what they, you know, of their qualifications. So they may have to pay some mortgage and some, you know, daycare and stuff like that in between that can be burdensome.
And we have support for that. That's a dislocated worker.
Okay.
And we do have support services and job training funds for those that find themselves in that situation where they're not able to return to the type of work they were doing, earning what they were earning. We don't want them to just take any job. We want them to have suitable income that's comparable to what they were earning. And so we have lots of programs that assist with that.
Thank you. And one more point on that. If someone is collecting unemployment, I remember as an employer, they used to come by and say, hey, I'm looking for a job, and you'd have to sort of sign off that they were actively looking for a job. Is that still the case, or can they, is there just a website where they can click, yes, I went looking?
Mr. Co-Chair, you're dating yourself.
I did that with the $2.75 an hour, I thought.
That we have electronic means now, and we have the ability to track their work search through the Alexa system, the Alaska Labor Exchange.
So there's still a requirement they physically.
There's still a work requirement,
and
yes,
verified.
Looking for work.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux.
So is it a requirement that they look online, or is it a requirement that they actually physically go to the job site?
Through the chair, they don't have to physically necessarily come into a job site. They can look for work online. That's how most people search for work today. You can use whatever means you choose as long as you are looking for work and available for work.
I guess kind of I see it as sometimes when you're looking for a job, I mean, there's one thing to click on a button and it says, okay, nothing's available. But it's another thing to actually go to the job site and introduce yourself to people. And then is that so outdated that you might actually meet somebody who might offer you a job?
Through the chair, that's very outdated. Employers don't have the time for folks to show up at the job site. And so the best way to seek out employment is to apply the way the employer has asked you to apply. So if they ask you to apply online, you need to follow the instruction. If you show up and they've asked you to apply online, you're not following the instruction.
Representative Tallarico, then Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just mention that my first minimum wage job was $1.85.
So
that's a difference that a decade can make, Mr. Chairman.
I'm a youngster.
And thank you for being here today. I just want to say, you mentioned safety several times, and I'm a former safety director, and I would assume that would mean that we will incorporate safety into all of our training so that we don't just have it as a flyer or a leaflet or a booklet, but we really turn it into a culture of safety. I know private employers, one of the worst expenses you can have in your business is to have injured workers or have a very simple task turn into a horrific incident, mm-hmm. which has happened too many times in the workforce, and it has. So is the plan, some of my prior experience was safety was just an add-on to programs, and I would just like to know if you feel like I do that it should be incorporated in, so that safety is a culture in our workforce, one of the more important things we do.
Through the chair, I do agree that it needs to be a part of our culture. I've asked the enforcement units to add a consultative approach to how they interact with the business community. They need to provide those workshops and training and to help people establish that culture of a safe workplace so that people are safe, so that you reduce the amount of accidents on the job. We don't want to just be enforcement. We want to be consultative as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Fields.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, I just want to follow up on Representative Ledoux's question and note that in the department, so Alexis is a system where employers who are actually seeking workers partner with Department of Labor and show what jobs are available, but Department of Labor also coaches people on how to go in person and actually do a good interview. So there is certainly support for the in-person interaction as well as the job search. And I don't know if Commissioner Ledbetter wanted to add anything, but certainly not to the exclusion of an effective in-person outreach.
Through the chair, great point. Thank you. Good volley.
Representative.
Yes.
I didn't mean to cut you off. Representative Hannah.
Well, I'm going to add a point on the adult job search and then ask a question on another topic through the chair. After I retired from a classroom job, I worked at an adult learning center here in town for 2 years, and we were one of the places we had people from the job center in once a month to work with our clients, but we also, everybody, first lesson is how you use Lexis, and then we could assist in verifying the number of jobs they've checked in a day before they submitted their resume and their application. There was an online checkoff if they were receiving unemployment benefits that they had applied for 3 jobs that week. And I couldn't do it right now off the top of my head, but there was a mechanism and we were an accepted checkoff that they had submitted the requisite number of job searches that week. My question has to do with another topic, which is the proposed budget from the governor has some agencies losing what are very good state jobs. The Department of Resources is closing recorder's offices in 5 different communities across the state, and I think a net loss of 7 positions. And those are people who may not be completely professionals. It may not be that you have a degree in geography, but they have good, solid jobs. And Department of Natural Resources said, yes, they're working to help them, giving them the opportunity to transfer, but in the end, there will be some job losses. And I'm wondering whether the Department of Labor is doing anything special to reach out to the state employees, because that department referenced that there's some labor contracts that will give them bumping rights, but in the end, there will be people across the state in the governor's proposed budget that would lose good, solid jobs in communities in not the ruralest parts of Alaska, but outside of Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau, and some in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. And are we prepared in reaching out to state employees who may not be used to using the Department of Labor to find their next job because they've had the opportunity to stay in the job system, but there's going to be fewer state jobs?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, we were proactive in that, and when the budget was released, we forwarded an email to the Chief of Staff to send out to all of the commissioners to let them know what the Department of Labor does. We have a rapid response program, which allows us to identify those individuals who have been notified that they will be laid off and they're losing their job for whatever reason of no fault of their own. We want to extend that service to them so that they can be connected with viable employment prior to their separation date. And so that service is already available, and you're right. As a state employee, they may not be used to utilizing our services, but we want to be proactive in offering that service so every single individual who is being impacted can be connected to work before their separation date. And also to go back to, through the chair, Co-Chair Ledoux's point of discussion, we do help individuals with resume writing and interviewing skills and how to show up to an employer and so that they are ready and prepared for those interviews once they get one. We let them know that the resume gets you the interview, and the interview gets you the job. And so we put forward a lot of effort and a lot of work to ensure that people have the skill set to look for work. Looking for work is like going to work. It requires skill and savvy, and we want to make sure that every individual has that so that they can be better prepared and they can have a successful work search that ends with an employment offer.
Thank you.
Representative Fields.
I don't remember when the governor's safety and health conference is, but I think it's during the legislative session. And
through the chair, April 2nd.
Okay. So since probably none of us will be able to attend that, perhaps it would be possible to send members of the committee some information about awardees at that conference. Getting back to Representative Tallarico's question, the Department of Labor actually supports, probably organizes that conference. Really recognizes companies that have done an amazing job creating a safety culture. One that springs to mind is the Alaska Tanker Company, and Neil Mather is the CEO. They've done unbelievable work, and I just think it's really inspiring, and I'd like to see what's happening at this year's conference since I'm not going to be able to make it. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess I have one last point. We can open for public testimony and then hopefully wrap things up. You mentioned, you know, how people look for jobs is different. Of course, it's changing over time. Are the job centers keeping up? Are the job centers reaching out to people through other means and not just relying people to walk in the front door, but maybe getting the word out to on social media or wherever that, hey, come see us or come communicate with us to see what we have because we have jobs and we want you to work. Are those processes going on?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we are doing everything we can to get the word out because we realize that some people don't even know what or where a job center is. And so, you know, oftentimes we can tell how long a person has lived in Alaska by what they call us. If they call us job service, we know it's been a while. If they call us the unemployment office, we know it's been even longer. If they call us, you know, the public assistance office, we know that they just have no connection to who we are. And so we have done quite a bit of marketing to ensure that our services are not only accessible, but we're reaching out to those priority populations rather than waiting for them to come into a job center.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Seeing no more questions or comments right now, I'm going to open for public testimony. Public testimony is open. I don't see anyone on the line. Is there anyone on the room that would like to testify? Seeing or hearing none, I will close public testimony. Any other comments from the committee? Seeing none, I think brings us to final comments. Seeing none, we will take a motion. Representative Ledoux.
The Labor and Commerce Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointee and recommends that the following name be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Dr. Tamika Ledbetter for the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you. This name will be forwarded to the joint session. After we adjourn, please stay behind to sign the confirmation sheet. Our next meeting will be on Friday, March 13th at 3:15. This meeting is adjourned at 4. And before I say that, I just want to thank you for coming in and testifying. And thank you and Deputy Commissioner for following up on some questions I had one of our first meetings. So it is 4:12. We will adjourn and stick around to sign the paperwork. Thank you.